Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Well, my friend Drew Curtis, who is the founder of Fark.com, and if you're, it's kind of interesting if you want to describe this, it was viral before viral was a thing. I remember when I first started out in my career, I would bounce between two websites. I would go to Drudge Report when it was first getting online with all the crazy stuff that was on there, and then I would go over to Fark.com and get a laugh. And then I would have to figure out how to hide that I was doing that from my boss in my cubicle. And Drew Curtis is the author of All My Pain during that period of time. Welcome back to the podcast, sir. How are you?
Doing good, man. Thanks for having me on. I could say I'm doing relatively good for a pandemic, I think is how I would describe it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing is, like, I'm just trying to find ways to find silver linings in all of this, because I think that, you know, Like all good books, the first adventure in the good book is just the beginning of the story, and I think we're in the beginning of the story, not in the end of it. I think when this is over, we're in for probably anywhere from a 2 to 10 year economic recovery. And one of the reasons I want to have you on is because you're a tech guy. When I said you were viral before viral was a thing, I meant that your website was huge and is huge, but you sort of were the first guy to figure out how to I forget the word for it in the internet, and you'll correct me on this, but essentially collate sources from all over the world and bring stories into one central place. You were the funny version of what Drudge Report has been known for. He was doing more, I want to shock you with these headlines, and you were doing more, I want to make you laugh with these headlines, and it was sort of this study of humankind all sort of amalgamated into one place. And so you have a real interesting and fascinating outlook on economic trends in the technology world. I think that would be accurate to say, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And also, you know, we've been around for 21 years, so this will be the third massive downturn we've gone through. So,
wow.
Seen this before.
Yeah. Aggregator, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Aggregator. What I wanted to sort of specifically focus on with you was that, you know, I feel like, as I said, this is the beginning of the story. We're in for a rough ride because I think the economy, we're never going to go back to the normal that we had 7 weeks ago. Whatever we were doing 7 weeks ago, I think everything is going to be different. I think there will be a new normal established. We won't be locked down forever, but there'll be a new way of doing business. And I wanted to see what you thought were the upcoming trends that you see over the horizon economically, because I think about, like, the Spanish flu, and that was a very deadly flu, but also the time in which that happened. Can you imagine doing what we're doing now with no internet?
No, absolutely not. We'd go crazy.
It would be insane, right? But look at what business can do now with internet. So what do you see as the emerging trends in business?
Yeah, so I'm getting this from kind of all places. Not only, to give you an example of where my viewpoint comes from, yesterday, I did a panel discussion with a accelerator in Silicon Valley with a whole bunch of startups who have been told by their venture capitalists that nobody's going to be investing anything for the next 2 years. And that's probably not an idle threat, because that happened in 2008. So we know that that's probably how it's going to go. And there's not a single startup company out there that can go 2 years.
Wow.
Unless they've got revenue already. Like, they're all dead.
Right.
And it was I accidentally said it.
Whoops.
The look of horror on their faces, they were like, oh shit. And I was like, okay, let me roll this back a bit to sort of soften the blow a bit here. I said, number one, this isn't your fault. And I say this too, by the way, because I've had these conversations with friends of mine that own bars and restaurants in Lexington. It's the same deal, you know?
Yeah.
If there's anything you can take away from this as a business owner is that you literally did not see this coming, and there's nothing you could do.
Right.
So, and furthermore, if you were in a precarious situation before, you can blame this. So, you know, you can kind of take a mulligan on this one as far as whose fault it is and
right.
move forward from there. But I said, the thing about it is like, this may be the end of your business, but it's not the end of you.
Yeah.
And in fact, what we saw the last couple times this happened, especially in Silicon Valley, is we started seeing these like the rock term for it is these super groups came together with sets of founders that never would have been able to operate under the same umbrella because they all individually would have been in the same company. So let me give you an example. So, you know, 2000 hits and a whole crap ton of people get laid off and a bunch of the smarter ones start coming together and forming companies. And one of the ones that ended up happening was is that a bunch of other founders started for some reason coalescing under eBay.
Yeah.
They didn't all start over there, but when everybody needed a job, they started going over there. And it turns out that eBay since, you know, is doing pretty good, but the founders that came out of there are absolutely unbelievable. It's like a who's who list of Silicon Valley. It's like Elon Musk, Max Levchin, you know, there's at least 50 guys that became billionaires later that were all under the same roof for a couple of years at eBay. And so that's something that'll start happening. And I was telling the guys, you know, I said, if you're looking for opportunities in Silicon Valley, look to start acquiring your competitors as they go under for Equihire, you know, like pick them up for debt or whatever.
Right.
And this is good for both in both directions. These guys get a job, you get talent, you get their equipment and their IP, and they don't go bankrupt. So it's kind of a win-win. So I was like, start forming Voltron over there.
This is interesting. I actually recently read the one of the biography attempts on Elon Musk, and it was kind of going through the, you know, his rise through the PayPal you mentioned, PayPal or eBay.
Which was eBay too.
Which was eBay too. And you're so right about it. Like there was literally this group, this sort of cabal of people that were going from startup to startup to startup to startup to startup, and then eventually things sort of shook out and they hit upon that one thing that made who they are, that made them that billionaire. So what you're saying is you see sort of opportunity in the rubble here, that talent is talent is talent. And that's the way I look at it. If you're a talented person and if you have a hard work ethic, you're going to be fine, but your life is going to be disrupted for a while. And it's just understanding that, sort of internalizing that, because we can talk about this from both a business standpoint and an individual standpoint, right? There's a lot of people lost their jobs. Literally, I think when the dust settles here, we are going to at least temporarily see unemployment numbers that supersede anything we saw in the Great Depression. And I think that's for a couple of reasons. Exactly. And I think it's for a couple of reasons. One, in the Great Depression, we had a manufacturing-based economy almost exclusively. Today, we have a consumer-based economy almost exclusively. And so consumer gets hit harder in a time like this, but I think it also bounces back quicker. Do you agree with that analysis?
It can, as long as the proper actions are taken. And so far, what the government is attempting to do is in the right direction.
Right.
We'll see if it plays out. But I think you're absolutely right about that, is that the comeback could be faster than we expect, but it's going to be totally different. And part of the problem we've got right now is there's this weird sort of fear and anxiety that everybody has comes from one specific circumstance that we've never encountered before in our lives, which is we have no idea what happens next month.
Yes.
And therein lies the problem. And so part of the reason why the unemployment's so high is because that's the case. Every business in the world has no other choice but to cut loose everybody because we don't know what's going to happen. So if, you know, and here's what I'm predicting, by the way, too. I've been watching this a while, and don't get me wrong, I'm an armchair quarterback, okay?
Yeah.
But the way that these numbers seem to be shaking out across the planet is it's 4 weeks to the top and it's 4 weeks to the bottom. And most of Europe has already gone past the crest, and New York City probably too, which means the rest of us are either there or hitting it in another week, which means also the time horizon for, okay, we know how this is going to play out. Like, we don't know it today, but by the end of the month, we will.
Right.
And at that point, if I'm a business and I go, oh, you know what? This isn't the apocalypse I thought it was, I start calling people and I bring them back. And
right.
The unemployment rate will then drop.
Right. That I actually am kind of thinking that is the trend we'll see if everything, as you say, is done right. Now, this is going to be weird, and I don't want to get political because this is not a political discussion. But as a conservative,
it's policy.
Political. Which is why I brought you on, because I actually, as a conservative, I actually agree with some of what the government's doing. You would never find me supporting government sending out massive checks to people, except in this situation. And it goes back to what you said.
Yeah, right now it makes sense.
Yeah, well, but it goes back to what you said to the businesses in the forum yesterday. This is not your fault. In other words, businesses are shut down and people's jobs are lost, not because they made a series of bad business decisions or bad work decisions, but because the government said—
Which is how capitalism works.
Exactly.
And which is a good thing.
Exactly. But this is because the government said, stay home or you're going to die, right? So it's an entirely different dynamic. And as a result of that, I think you're right. Some of the what do you think of like the small business loan program where it says, look, if you have a small business now, we're going to loan you money, which will be forgiven as long as you rehire your workers. Do you lump that in good policy?
Policy, yes. And the reason why, like, for a couple of reasons. One, that 2 months might be enough to get us there. And two, like you said, it's a consumer-based economy. So as long as you can move money into the system, that's just going to come right back in the form of taxes and revenue. So it should work. The problem is that and speed was a factor here too. I don't know if anybody else could have rolled it out better, but the banks are confused right now. Like, I still don't know how to sign up for this for my bank, for example. I was looking at it today. I didn't make the SBA loan because they got that one together in time, but the other one, it's not clear how to do it. I mean, eventually this will get solved, but you know, it's been a little rocky, but no, that's totally the best thing to do. And worst case, they should do it again. And not only that, but they totally skewed it towards small businesses too, because they capped the salaries you can recoup at $100,000, which means this primarily only helps small businesses. which I think is a great thing.
Because the bigger businesses, I mean, not to pick winners and losers here, but the bigger businesses most likely have cash and infrastructure on hand that can get them cash. In other words, if you're Target, you may not have $5 billion cash on hand, which you probably do, but you do have assets that can basically be used as collateral to get that cash when you need it, so they can handle this. Whereas small businesses, I know a guy that owns a chicken restaurant, a fast food chicken franchise. Fortunately for him, he is the only restaurant in the area that actually is doing well, because you know everything else is sort of shut down. And so, but at the beginning, he was terrified because he had literally just opened this business. And particularly fast food franchising usually operates on anywhere from a 1% to 3% profit margin. I don't think people realize just how little they scrape by on. This ended up being fairly decent for him because, you know, he can still do the drive-through and the takeout, and that's working. But he was terrified because of his very slim profit margin. They don't have a bunch of money saved up. They don't own a bunch of assets. They're completely leveraged on the building. They're completely leveraged on their employees. They're completely leveraged on their equipment. So a small business is in a totally different financial situation when you have something like this happen than a large business.
Totally. And I mean, to your point too, some of the steps that have been taken in order to make delivery easier have made a huge difference in operations. So for example, 2 weeks ago, we do a Tiki Tuesday Zoom meeting with a friend group that my wife has for the guy that owns the Green Lantern, because, you know, they all want to see each other.
Right.
2 weeks ago, he drank himself into a stupor, the owner, and basically said, we're done. Like, this is it. I'm bankrupt. I got to get a job at Costco just so I can have health insurance, and we're screwed. Now he's like, last week he said, you know what, with the things they've announced, there's a possibility that this might work. And this week he said the game changer was being able to sell cocktails by the drink out the door.
Right.
He said huge game changer, because he's like, we sell beer, but we're not, you know, we're competitive with the gas station down the street, but we're not cheaper and nobody's in the habit of coming. But cocktail by the drink, on the other hand, is saving his ass.
Right.
Because he's selling it out the door, and all of a sudden now the overhead's lower, and the revenue's lower, but the profit's about the same, and it's actually going to help him survive through it. And another example I got too is, I live here in Versailles. Rolling Oven Pizza is the only local pizza place here in town, was struggling until the governor issued the executive order to allow them to sell beer. And now they have a large pizza, two toppings, and a growler for $30.
Nice.
And all of a sudden, I don't have any insight into how well they're doing, but I think they're doing well because they are promoting other restaurants now on their Facebook page. And that tells me that they're doing fine, and that's awesome.
Yeah. I think we should do all we can to try to support small businesses as well. And I know that we can't go out shopping and that kind of thing. But, you know, my wife and I were on vacation in Montana last year, and we went to this little sort of farm-to-table restaurant in Bozeman. And I had literally the best cup of coffee that I've ever had in my life. I mean, I kid you not, I'm not like a huge coffee aficionado, but I was like, this is literally the best cup of coffee I've ever had. So I went up to the counter. I said, where is this coffee from? They said, it's from Rockford Coffee downtown. We literally sought out the coffee store. I bought two bags, came home. When I ran out of that, I ordered some more and sent them a shout out. It was funny. I got an email, and they were like, we got a bunch of orders from Louisville, Kentucky. Was that you? Because the other day, they had posted that they had pandemic-proof coffee, and here they are. They're a coffee shop, like an independent coffee shop, where most of the time the nut of their business is people coming in, just basically sitting down and having a cup of coffee. Now they've had to completely shift their business model, and now they're trying to sell coffee by the order to deliver. Well, you know, for me to send out a shout out to my 5,000 social media followers or 10,000 social media followers was an easy thing to do, to say, here's a small business. I know it's not in our local area, but it's just a small business, and they're trying to find a way to survive. Buy some of the best coffee you've ever had, because I want these businesses to be there when we get through this.
Yeah, totally agree. But I think also sort of what this highlights is the shift to delivery for things that were previously impossible to deliver, like alcohol, for example.
Yeah.
They're probably going to have to keep that one forever. And I don't think there's going to be too much fuss. I think the problem was getting rid of the old laws was like there wasn't enough, you know, will to get excited about it. But now it's like, I don't think you can shift this back and allow these guys to stay going, because we're not going to be able to like let everybody out and go nuts.
Right.
You know, when we finally come out of this quarantine, it's going to be bit by bit.
Bit by bit. Yeah.
And I think forevermore, if you're a restaurant or a bar, to-go orders are going to be a much more substantial part of your business than they ever were.
Well, and that's where that kind of brings me to the sort of the first shift that I see in the economy. And I want to see what your thoughts are on this. But what I see happening is I myself am going to be a person who orders a lot more for delivery, just because I've discovered how convenient it is. But also, yes, to be honest with you, knowing that this isn't going to go away until we get really a vaccine, even when we're reopened for business, I'll do everything I can to patronize the local small businesses. But when it comes to things I would buy at, say, a Target or whatever, I'm ordering that puppy online, either from Target's online or Amazon's online. I mean, that's where I'm getting toilet paper exclusively right now. So there's going to be, I think, a huge trend towards online ordering like we haven't seen before. It was already big, but mainly around Christmas time. But I think now, I think a lot of people are going to be like, hey, this is pretty convenient to get my, I get my meat delivered to my house. You know, I think a lot of people are going to do that.
Yeah, I think a lot of the small guys are doing it too. For example, there's been a couple places, like to give them a shout out, Standing Room Only in Lexington, run by the Yamaguchis, is absolutely amazing. But they had this thing where you could get lunch once a week on a Tuesday, which was fine, but you had to go in there and then it was make the order, which is still fine because the food's good and it's worth it. But driving over there, and then you'd usually have to wait 20 or 30 minutes because the food is very carefully assembled.
Right.
It takes a lot of time. Since this, the pandemic hit, they quickly transferred into a order business. Now you can order online via text either way. And so now they just shaved an hour off of the amount of time it takes me to get food from them.
Wow.
And this is way better going forward. And it's something that every small business probably thought they might get around to doing, but now they all have to do it. Like Rolling Oven, I told you, I don't know if these guys had it before, but every small business now has online ordering. They got it really quick. And not only that, but even the food delivery. Like, so I live in Versailles, right? We don't have Uber Eats or Grubhub. So two dudes with a car have created their own delivery system. Where you just call them.
That's awesome.
And they'll go get it.
I love capitalism. Yeah. I love capitalism, cool. Drew. I love it. I love watching stuff like this happen. Because we are seeing
My favorite story I heard was, my favorite story about that too is, but you're talking about being creative. Now that you can, if you have a package license, you can do alcohol to go. I don't know which business this was in Lexington, but I heard about a couple of guys, since they have a license, just started driving around with a truck with a bunch of kegs in the back, and they'll fill up any growler you want for $15.
That is
and
awesome.
And I was like, you know, they had to play music too while they drive around. You know, like, here comes the ice cream truck, or
I love
the growler fill.
Yes, play your favorite beer song. So instead of the ice cream truck, it's a beer truck. That would revolutionize the economy right there. By the way, small business shout outs are 100% welcome on this program. I mean, whatever we can do to help these guys that are struggling out there to make it through. Because specifically, you mentioned, you know, a couple restaurants in Lexington. Lexington is quickly becoming, you know, not to shift to a food topic here, but it's quickly becoming a foodie town. And there's some extraordinarily innovative food ideas that were really starting to pop up. And to see something like this topple those terrifies me, because I want that innovation to continue. You know, my wife and I, we pick a couple of restaurants here and there that we really, really like, and we'll go back to often. You know, one of my favorite places, I'll give a shout out to them, is Bluebird in Stanford, Kentucky. The Bluebird Cafe. This is a phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, that place is awesome.
Yeah, and it's a phenomenal story, too. I mean, a family that basically bought all of downtown Stanford and started renovating it and then leasing it at affordable prices to small businesses and just trying to make that town thrive. And now they've opened a second restaurant, which is a pizza restaurant. The guy that's a chef there is—he's a terrific story. It's farm to table. It's all local stuff. You know, they partner with Marksberry Farm in Garrett County, and they bring this delicious, healthy, wholesome Kentucky-based food. And now they're shifting to this sort of we'll deliver and you can pick it up. God, please let's take these innovative businesses. We don't want the landscape to be barren of these kinds of innovative ideas when this is all over.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. By the way, this is going to – we probably need to pause here real quick because Bernie Sanders just dropped out of the race, and I got to post something on Twitter.
Yeah, sure. No worries. I can hit pause. I guess in essence, we actually hit pause on this because we had breaking news right in the middle of the podcast, and that is that Bernie Sanders apparently has dropped out of the presidential race. And let's use this as an opportunity, Drew, to tell people a little bit about what you guys do at FARC.com. FARC.com. It almost sounded like I said fart.com. Just tell people a little bit about your website.
Yeah, so it's a news aggregation website, but with kind of a twist. We're not just aggregating the news. Like, that's more like what Drudge does. I mean, he spends it up a little bit, but for the most part, like, every site has all the news for the most part, so especially something like Sanders dropping out, right? Like, everybody's going to run that one. And our gig is we try to re-headline them with something that's better or funnier. In particular, I just spent about 10 or 15 minutes waiting for somebody to submit the best tagline about Bernie Sanders dropping out. And, I went with Larry David loses steady gig.
How do you come up with that stuff so quick? Like how, like,
you're,
yeah,
I don't know, man. It's
we're on the phone.
Is the crowd?
Yeah. We're on the phone.
Crowd is submitting, right?
So you're picking from the crowd.
Yeah, exactly. So I got like, what happens is we news hits and then, bunches of people who read FARC know that we're going to pick this story because
right.
we are.
Right.
So it becomes this immediate surprise competition to see who could be the funniest.
I love it.
With the headline. And so people just literally start hammering away. If you have a subscription to the back end of it, which we call Total FARC, it's like right. $5 a month and it keeps us running. You can actually see this happen in real time.
Right.
Where every single permutation of every joke gets submitted like in rapid succession. Like, it's just a storm of news flashes where everybody's trying to come up with the best riff. And so to give you an example of what that looked like, most of them were puns because those are easy.
Right.
Burnout, was submitted by at least like 10 people, of course. But I'm like, yeah, let's do something a little better. I like better curveballs than that. And Larry David came in about 10 minutes after. And I was like, yep, boom, done. And
contest is over. The key in that is to be subtle, but not unobvious, right? Like, it's like I don't know,
yes,
I don't know what the word is. It's like obvious.
There's
is
a sweet spot there.
Yeah, exactly, because people, like you said, burn is out or burnout or whatever, that's too obvious. Too many people are going to submit.
Yeah,
that
right.
No, almost no one's going to think of Larry David loses steady gig, and yet everyone's going to know what that means as soon as they read it.
Correct. And so it's like that perfect sort of, okay, we got it this time. It got submitted. Usually what happens is I'll pick one just because I don't see a good one. And then the minute I punch it through, here comes the best headline, like 1 second too late. I'm like, damn
right.
it. Back here, let me go. I'll check this real time right now. Let me see if anybody submitted anything better in the last 2 minutes. No, we're good. So
right.
There you go.
Right. And you categorize the stories like PSA, newsflash, America,
exactly.
Amusing, stupid, all that.
Yeah, those are actually that's a vital part of it too, because like those are actually descriptor tags. Like,
right.
You'll notice that they are, I mean, they sound like nouns, but they're all adjectives.
Right.
And what that allows you to do is you can do tongue in cheek comedy in written text, because if you think about it, that's impossible. Irony right. is kind of lost on the internet.
Right.
But if, for example, if I say something in a straight face, like Donald Trump revealed to be lizard person, linking to an article that says Donald Trump was revealed to be a lizard person, but instead if I tag it facepalm, I'm kidding.
Right, right, right. My favorite
tagline. That's why that's useful.
Yeah, my favorite tag you guys have is Florida. Like, literally, it's Florida.
Yeah, and then it's Florida. Everybody knows what that one means.
Yeah, because there's one up here right now. Florida residents show why there's a Florida tag. Risk getting coronavirus by lining up real tight to get paper applications for unemployment benefits as the state tries to fix problems with online filing. And it's just,
what they do.
Normally, that would be under stupid, but because it's Florida, it's Florida. So
it's
I love
Florida.
That. Yeah. So how are trends? Because what we were talking about when Bernie Sanders so rudely interrupted us by dropping out of the presidential race was trends of future economics. And we were sort of covering the ground of businesses, and we were wanting to support small businesses and local business, and we were talking about what are the trends of future businesses. How do you think this affects you as an online business who's probably getting an enormous amount of site traffic right now, and yet maybe that makes revenue a little bit tricky for you because of everything being shut down. What's the shift for you?
Yeah, we're actually, I mean, I am an eternal optimist, and I've got three ways out of this, but the way it's shaping up right now at the end of the first week of April, we are going out of business. It's really bad. I think we made less than $3,000 in the last 7 days.
Wow.
Advertising revenue has gone through the floor. Because yeah. That's what happens. I mean, this happened in 2008. This would have happened in 2001 if advertising was a thing. It's a normal part of the cycle. But I'm hopeful that, you know, I mean, I'm applied for the small business loan. I've applied for the payroll one. Hopefully there'll be money left. And if we can get through the next couple of months and advertising revenue bounces back, we're going to be okay. But I can't say with any confidence that any of those things are going to happen. And being responsible for employees, I can't just blindly assume it either. So right. I have to take drastic measures. So like what I'm doing is I'm basically sounding the alarm, like our newsletter goes out today. And I'm telling everybody, I'm like, look, guys, here's what's going to happen in the next few weeks. If we need people to sign up for subscriptions or we are done.
Right.
So that's the first and foremost, is if anybody can do it, sign up. The second thing we're going to do is sometime this week, we're going to test to see what the revenue bump is when we start blocking ad blockers, because we don't do that yet. And the reason why we don't do it is because some people, in fact, a lot of people use ad blockers for reasons other than just hating ads.
Right.
We have discovered that if you have an older PC, for example, there's a lot of video ads that'll drag your computer to a crawl. So using ad block is the only way you can see anything. And so, okay, I get that. Or there's disability stuff where, for example, if you're blind and you're running a voice-to-text system and then a video ad comes and sucks up all your CPU, it slows your entire system down. So I understand that as well. But we're getting to the point where we have to make choices about who's in our audience. And so right. Step one is, does banning ad block make a revenue bump? It almost certainly is going to, because 60% of our audience uses it.
Right.
So I have a feeling that we're going to have to turn that sucker on. Step two is, if that's not enough, we might have to block non-subscribers. Because, and again, I don't want to do that either, but that's the only choice available, right? I mean,
right.
You can see how these go. It's pretty
right.
clear. And then, you know, step three is, if that doesn't work, I got to fire everybody.
Right.
And then hope that people will volunteer enough time to keep it going. And then if that doesn't work, I got to fire sale this thing to, I don't know, somebody.
Right.
So, you know, but we'll see. I mean, there's things coming around. And I always have to tell people, it's like, don't let the lack of fear in my voice fool you into thinking I'm unconcerned about it. But what I've learned is that fear doesn't help.
Right.
Being anxious doesn't help. It doesn't make anything better. It doesn't make me work harder. So I've just learned to not worry about it and just, you know, get your plans together. But here's what I will say. If we can get through this, we will be fine.
Right.
And I am hopeful that, you know, give it a couple of months, advertising money comes back. And honestly, like, here's something I would say to anybody out in the audience. If you ever wanted to do digital marketing, holy crap, is it the time? Like,
yeah.
I mean, you want to, ad rates are like 80% lower. Go
right.
nuts.
Right.
Save the entire news or industry by buying ads now. Go for it.
That's a really good point. What do you see as a trend developing major in the economy going forward? We mentioned that we're a broadly consumer-based economy. The other thing that we're seeing is a shift towards working online and working from home. You know, a lot of companies that you thought, there's no way that I can take these people out of this office, and now they're having to do it out of necessity because the government told them to, and they're finding that it's possible, it's workable. I had a business meeting
yep.
yesterday. I was connected with three business colleagues. I was wearing a sport coat and Nike gym shorts, but they couldn't see that.
Yep.
But I mean, it's very possible to be effective remotely. They were in two different states, so three different states represented. It's very. Do you see that as a huge trend, that like coming out of this, we might have more flexible work environments?
Absolutely. So one of the things that's interesting is zipping back and forth between Silicon Valley and Kentucky is a lot of the things they're doing there and that they take for granted are things that nobody else is doing yet. Along those lines, not only is telework a big deal, but also, for example, every incubator and accelerator program out there has a coaching component to it, which is fascinating to me, because like life coaching in particular, my wife has been moving from psychology to life coaching because
mm-hmm.
it's real similar. It's just a different client base and a different strategy. So, you know, out in Kentucky, for example, people can be convinced that it's a vital thing, because it's just good having somebody living over your shoulder telling you, hey, here's, you know, you're on the right track or you're not. But meanwhile, you go to Silicon Valley and it's integrated into the startup mindset that you have a coach.
Right.
Like that's in there. It's implicit. And it's along those same lines, so is working remotely. In fact, I've been spending a lot of time in the last couple of years, mostly because I hate Facebook a lot, and I'm really good friends with Steve Huffman, who's the CEO at Reddit. And I can't take out Facebook from where I am because FARC is big, but it's not hundreds of millions of people big, but Reddit is. And Reddit wants to take out Facebook. And so I've been working with Steve trying to help him out, basically saying, look, you know, what do you got over there that I can give you a hand with? Like, can I help you take Facebook down? And I've been working with them. They are almost entirely remote work. Like, they have an office.
Right.
I don't know how many employees they've got, but it seems like there's a couple hundred in downtown San Francisco. And it's interesting because not everybody has a desk, and the conference rooms are crowded because sometimes on those days, those employees will come into the office because it's easier to just be there. But they don't have to. They could just stay wherever the hell they are, Dublin or Seattle or whatever. And so they've been remote working for, you know, years now. And to give you an example of how used to it I am, I've been remote working since the beginning. I've been doing it for 20 years. Like, when right. when the quarantine hit, nothing changed for me. I've been home the entire time. So it's just pretty normal, other than the kids are around, which just makes it like summer. So, you know, it's been pretty much par for the course. I think there's a lot of companies that didn't realize they could do this,
right,
and are now giving some serious thought to, now that we can. I mean, think of all the money you save in rent overhead by distributing. Like, the reason we don't do it, aside from the fact that none of my employees live in the same state, is because even if they did, I got to go get an office and pay rent. Like, yeah. The hell with that. Rent is an optional expense
right
now. And that's a huge game changer.
Yeah, I actually had a business meeting remotely with a guy a couple of weeks ago, and he said, I am rethinking my 20,000 square foot workspace, where I could maybe downsize that to 2,000 or 3,000, just have the executive team and offices to meet in, but everybody else gets to go home. You know, this could save me tons of money once we bounce back from this. So there's that
as
well.
And also, in schools too, watching my kids. So we, in the county we live in, we're lucky. We live in a low population county, but it's got a high land value. So the school system, it's amazing what a fully funded public school system will do.
Right.
For example, like, all the kids get Chromebooks, everybody's on Google Classroom. They have been since sixth grade. And they have what they call NTI days, which is basically, if they get a snow day, they just flip over to online learning. So they already had all this in place. And then, you know, the school system gets shut down. The county just immediately just switched to online learning. The only thing that's happening differently is that now they're using Zoom meetings integrated into that, because now that we know this is going to be long term, they just check in. But what's fascinating about how they're doing it, and it changes how learning works, is they drop the packet with the instructions, and then the teachers are available for people that get stuck. And if you think about it, this is a game changer, because now the teachers can work exclusively with the specific students that are having specific problems, which they couldn't do in a classroom setting because they'd be ignoring everybody else. Now it doesn't matter.
What's interesting about that is I grew up, my parents founded a private Christian school on an Indian reservation in Arizona, so I grew up there. And the curriculum that we used was called ACE, Accelerated Christian Education. And long before internet was like a big thing everywhere, they were using sort of that model to educate kids, not necessarily the internet, but the teachers working exclusively with kids struggling. We used things called a PACE. A PACE was a book. And each grade was divided into 12 paces, and each subject had its own set of grade paces, right? So you had 12 booklets that you worked through for math, 12 booklets that you worked through for social studies, English, science, etc. And you worked through those on your own at your own pace in a classroom setting, but everybody was separate. We had these desks that had walls between them, like mini cubicles, so that you could be sitting next to another student but not looking at them. When you needed help, you put an American flag in a little hole at the top of your desk wall, and that told the teacher that you needed to speak with them, and they would come over and deal with whatever the problem was. So what ended up happening was, a guy like me, who really struggles with math and say physics and that kind of thing, but really excels at communications like social studies and English, literally was done by my freshman year with all of my social studies and English. And then the last 3 years was able to focus exclusively on what I struggle with, and ended up graduating as a valedictorian. That could not happen in a setting where you can't have that sort of individualized, sort of almost tutoring setting. So that's interesting that something like this forces us to reimagine the model, so to speak, and the people who need it most are now getting the help. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because it's more molded by the technology and the capabilities we have. I think it's just, it's lucky happenstance that it turns out that that better style of learning is completely suited towards online learning. Like that's what's going on right now. And I look at things like that and I think, man, that's an interesting thing to come out of this as well.
All right, real quick. I've got about 3 minutes here and I've got another podcast to record. I know I've kept you longer than I said I would. So,
it doesn't matter. I don't mind.
Well, let me just kind of get in by way of wrapping this up. Two things I'd like to get your thoughts on. One, what is your level of optimism that the economy does recover if we say come out of most of this, say by the middle of May, in terms of, you know, sequestering ourselves at home?
So I don't know. And the reason why is we don't yet know who the losers are.
That's a good point.
Because so if you're correct, like you actually pointed to one outcome, which is if this mostly lands on larger companies that can take a hit, but keep on ticking, then we'll be okay. But it's possible that the policy outcome gets structured in a different way. And that doesn't happen. And if it, for example, let's say, you know, for whatever reason, the structure ends up benefiting the large corporations like the Amazons and the Googles or whatever, then we end up with like six companies. Don't yet know which way this is going to play out, because like I said, the losers haven't been chosen and it isn't clear. So the lobbying hasn't started yet. So we'll just have to wait and see. It's possible that could go the other direction, but right now I don't know. So we're just going to have to see. It could go either way. The reason why this matters is because there was a great book. I wish I knew the title because I read it a long time ago, talking about the mishandling and the missteps of the Great Depression. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of what came out of the Depression, the reason why it lasted 10 years was because, you know, Roosevelt did some very good things and some very bad things.
Right. Like,
and in fact, the reason that it lasted 10 years was because of the bad choices that they made.
Yeah.
They weren't all bad choices, but those extended it.
Yeah.
And so we'll just have to wait and see what the bad choices end up being.
Yeah.
But the good news is this, it's pretty clear by the rate of the speed by which the Fed moved and what they specifically did indicated that they learned a lot from just 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Which was really interesting. And by the way, they didn't just like one of the things I see my friends saying is that we kicked them $4 trillion, you know, to the big banks to keep it running. That's not exactly what happened. I mean, basically when the Fed raises and lowers the interest rate, they create or they destroy the money supply.
Right.
And they do this by either creating bonds, which they literally print off the printer, or by, you know, or by buying them back and then shredding them. And this is literally how it works. It sounds crazy. But the upshot is that they just injected $4 trillion in, which when the economy recovers, they are going to subtract back out.
Right.
So we didn't just it's not going to cause any long-term damage, but it was exactly the right move.
Right.
And it's interesting to see them doing that.
To your point, too, you know, you talked about the Great Depression. You know, like you said, there were good decisions and bad decisions made. If we get stuck into an eternal Keynesian welfare response to this, we're going to drag out the recovery.
Correct. But, that has to stop at some point, but right now it's okay.
But right now it's okay. Exactly. Because right now people are dealing with things that these are through no fault of their own. It wasn't Wall Street speculation. It wasn't bad business decisions. It's the government saying stay home or die. And so, you know, at this point, but then there has to be a cutoff point. And if they do that and they handle it right, and like I said, like you said, you know, if the big businesses can weather this, the small businesses have that help, then we hopefully can recover relatively quickly. Listen, Drew, it's always great talking to you. I love FARC.com. How can people subscribe and help your business out?
Yeah, actually, there's a big thing on the main page of FARC that says subscribe to Total FARC. We also have a Bear FARC thing. Basically, Total FARC's $5 a month. Bear FARC is $250 and it erases the ads. And honestly, if you were going to pick one of those, although we get more money for the other subscription and you can pick both if you want, the $2.50 no ads thing is great because we don't make $2.50 off of anyone on ads in a month. So that's a way better deal for us and for you too, because, you know, I would rather not have to deal with ads, but, you know, this is what we got.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do?
Awesome. I love it. It's FARC.com, FARK.com. Drew Curtis, love having you back, man. Let's do it again sometime. And by the way, you have a podcast with Todd Schnitt. It's Fark and Schnitt.
Yes.
I love that.
You should check that one out. It's a weird amalgamation of Schnitt, who's a conservative radio guy, but a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
He's the right conservative too. Like I wouldn't say I'm not liberal, don't get me wrong, but
right.
I'm pragmatic.
Right.
But it was a combination between my humor and his delivery. And honestly, I don't know what to make of it. It's a unique type. You've never heard anything like it because nobody would ever try to even do this.
Well,
we're doing it. So
that's
it
exactly
is.
That's what FARC was when you started it. I mean, you're a trendsetter, you know? So listen, good talking to you, Drew. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Let's all try to make it through together. All right.
Indeed.
All right. Have a good one.
See ya.
All right, that's Drew Curtis. And again, it's FARK.com, F-A-R-K, F-A-R-K.com, Drew Curtis. Pretty cool stuff. Love that guy and interesting trends. Hey, we've got lots more great episodes coming up this week, and the best thing you can do for me is share this podcast. Let's get as many subscribers in. It's free to this podcast as we can possibly, because that actually amplifies our voice. It amplifies your voice if you believe that I am speaking on your behalf. So absolutely share this podcast. Thanks to my co-producer and co-executive host, Cameron Mills. Thanks to Dynamics Audio Productions, dynamicsaudio.com. It's dxaudio.com, actually, dxaudio.com for all your production needs. They provide the music for this show. You can follow us on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at The Disruption, or at Zone Disruption. And on Instagram, it's at Greatly Londo and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening. Share the podcast. Check you next time on The Disruption Zone.